from my listening audience. This is Tim Fro is reading, broadcasting from Northside. I'm excited to bring you this episode. I'm going to be talking about many and many things. What I'm reading finally, because this is Tim Fro is reading, what I'm eating, what I'm watching, COVID shenanigans, and basically an expansion of Black Earth Rising in a little known movie that I just found with Montgomery Clift and Elizabeth Taylor named Braintree County that was shot in part here in Tennessee. And this is just another Wednesday for me with my passion project of what it is. And this is, and please continue to listen to Hey Ya from Outkast on Throwback, their album Throwback Thursday. And I hope you guys have a great day and a great week as I've been having. And enjoy. And this, and as well as everything else that you listen to on this podcast, is available for immediate streaming on iTunes. You can locate it directly on my One Podcast playlist or wherever you listen to music. And shake it, like a salt shaker. Polaroid picture, sorry y'all. Introduce and lean into this next section without using the music of the Queen Bey herself, Beyonce, the expanded edition of Four, Run the World Girls. Do I know if all the cool stuff in the world were made by girls? No, but this new update, what I talk about from Mac, has a feeling of a female influence because it just makes sense and it's so just next level that I'm thinking a whole bunch of females had to be in on it. And y'all can tell me and comment on it for yourself. This is the next section of the podcast. Oh, this is cool. I think this part of the show is going to become one of my most favorite parts because I'm such a nerd and it is so funny when I find things that really absolutely interest me. For example, this second session is absolutely dedicated to the new update, the iOS 15 update. They now I get why they had such a fanfare. I think on the Apple's campus in California, they actually had like almost what you would absolutely see for a premiere of a big time movie. I thought they were being extra, but when you look at all the new really cool things. For example, the first thing is a preview. Reduce, when you're on FaceTime, you actually have the ability to reduce background noise. It basically, it's this update, I hope it doesn't break things, but this update gives you a standard microphone clarity
voice isolation and wide spectrum to make your voice come through loud and clear when you're on FaceTime. You can also look in the shared with you section of an app to find photos, music, websites, and content sent to you and messages you can quickly reply to the sender. You can really stay focused. Basically, I put it on silence or do not disturb whenever for a certain period of time. I've actually had that since the previous several times before any of the previous updates, which I think is cool. You can also turn on and off and how all of your how and when your notifications actually appear to you. And you can also tile it and do several things to make it more convenient for you. In select cities, you can scan your surroundings and get a live way to, like, when you're using maps, and get a live directions on your phone. You can organize your tab groups and to see only the web pages you need. You can actually select text in a photo and then call the telephone number, open a website or more. This would have been helpful to have this as a tool when I was actually looking for a house. You can invite anyone, even Android people, to a FaceTime call by just sharing a link. You can translate text into PDFs and other messages. This is actually good because I know that there was a big beef while he was alive between Adobe and Steve Jobs. And then gives you go to apple.com to learn more and to leave comments on the preview itself. I think it's going to be pretty badass, and this is one of the only updates that I'm actually looking forward to getting, because it's going to allow me to do more with this phone beyond what I use it for now. Text, video, etc.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything.
That is Reading Rainbow theme song, and of course, everybody knows the Reading Rainbow from LeVar Burton and all the controversy behind the selection of Alex Trebek's successor for Jeopardy, and how he was absolutely passed over for a producer who had said some problematic things 10 years ago. And what a way to introduce this next segment and the subsequent segment, what I'm reading, what I'm eating, Get Your Coin, and what I'm watching. Because Reading Rainbow, that theme basically is why I have this podcast, Tenfro is Reading, and why I start the podcast. I read what I like, and I talk about what I read, and I only talk about the stuff that I like to read. So here you go. Next sections, I'm probably going to just use this music to introduce what I'm reading, what I'm eating, and Get Your Coin. And then I'm going to use something, and what I'm listening to, and then what I'm watching are going to be separate sections, because I think I got some music that may play into that a little bit better than the Reading Rainbow. So listen up for what I'm reading, what I'm eating, and Get Your Coin. And thank again, as always, thank you for listening.
So what am I reading and eating? Well, if you have a podcast that is Tenfro is Reading or Tenfro is Eating, you probably need to talk about reading and eating. And it hasn't been until recently that I have really started reading anything in earnest. I got a book, a compilation of Zora Neale Hurston's short stories from my friend, big ups to my good friend, J.B. Smooth from Northern Virginia, in gifting me this book. I really like it. And I'm adding it to, if I haven't already, I think I did, I'm adding it to my online bookstore, Chatterbooks, which you can navigate to and get this as well as several other books. But this is her book that was posthumously, meaning she died and they published this book after she died, a collection of her lost Harlem Renaissance stories. And they really weren't lost. They were just waiting to be found where she had originally published them. And it's hitting a straight lick with a crooked stick, which means when you achieve a goal, but how you got to the goal is a direct contraindication. Or you achieve this goal in spite of a basically circuitous route to get to the goal. So, old Southern saying by the person that wrote the foreword, and that is my dog Ethel Mertz barking because my food is here, and that's one of the things I'm going to be talking about eating. I thought it was Thursday, and I was supposed to have been Thai Thursday. However, I have decided to order the Thai tonight, and I also will be posting on my Tenfro is Reading Instagram feed. My tacos, can't even call them street tacos because I think those are made with soft flour tortillas, and I had the hard tortillas, but the braised beef chuck with guac and sour cream and fresh cilantro made two really good meals. Dinner last night as well as lunch for today. It was National Beer Day on yesterday, and I had washed it down with a really flavorful tequila margarita last night, but the Corona I had to wash it down today was actually really good too. But I have a feeling that this spicy basil leaves with shrimp, spring rolls, and basil rolls from Sweet Basil and here in Chattanooga is going to be just the ticket. I'll basically post you can check out my Instagram feed to see these selections as well as my other food porn at your convenience on my Instagram feed, as well as check out the people that I'm following because I follow a lot of foodstagrammers, chefs that are actually doing what I do, and sometimes even better. So check out my Instagram feed, Tenfro is Reading. Leave comments, as long as they're not trolly, I'll actually mention them. I may actually mention them and like them back on the Instagram feed, but also mentioned them on my podcast. One of my followers did just that, and I'm going to give her a shout out because she's been following me for a minute. Chef Dumplin, of course, my friend Janelle, Rob Ainge, Of course, my good friend Yvonne. And you'll be, Matt Priest actually commented, give me big ups, because I actually gave them a shout out on my website. Maria Hub 8. There's a whole bunch of people that seem to like what I do, and it makes me feel good that I actually bring other people joy just by simply posting great pictures of food, which is kind of fun. I wish I could find a way to completely monetize it and just get more people to follow me. I entered in a promotion, and now I'm up to 1,284 followers, so that was actually pretty good. So, but getting back to the meaning of the podcast and also my Instagram feed, Tinfo is reading, should be Tinfo is reading and eating, because while I'm eating some very good stuff, I'm also reading great books. And this collection of Zora Neale Hurston's book, a collection of her Harlem short stories, Hitting a Straight Lick with a Crooked Stick, was basically all of these stories were written throughout the Harlem Renaissance. I think she got, she did reach some notoriety during her life, but a lot of people have rediscovered her and have written about her, and there has been an increase in some of the interest in her, simply because people are rediscovering how her great talent. Toni Morrison wrote of her, or said of her before she passed away, one of the greatest writers of our time. You know, that's the pot calling the pot. You know what I mean? Because both are great writers. I remember reading, and I'm going to probably end up rereading it again, Their Eyes Were Watching God, which was another one of her great novels. But these short stories are gems on their own, because in very few words or in a very short period of time, she gets to the peak, and she's an amazing storyteller. All of her stories take place in the Deep South, in particular Eatonville, Florida, one of the first and only incorporated towns just for Black people at a time when the KKK was running crazy, basically throughout the United States. The first one, John Redding Goes to Sea, was interesting, and it was also sad, but I didn't like that one as much as The Conversion of Sam, which is about a street hustler that tries to go the straight and narrow, and then his friends like Crab pull him back into the underbelly of this little fictional, this is one of the fictional small towns that she writes about. I really like that. And A Bit of Harlem, where it is only like three pages, but how one down and out kid helps another by buying some candy, and they ended up blessing each other. And then I read Drenched in Light, which is about a little girl named Issy Watts, whose grandmother, in a means of protecting her, is trying to squelch her light. And she's saved from a whipping by a white woman, I don't know, an evildoer or someone that needed a bit of light, and basically offers the grandmother $5 and pays for this little girl. I think that in itself is harkens back to The Color Purple and everything you hear about the South. But the little girl didn't care. She just went with these people, and it was a means to an end. Not only was she saved from a whipping, she was absolutely saved and was looking forward to a life of being able to sing and dance without having what she thought, because we don't know what happens to her after she leaves with the white couple and goes back to their hotel. If they got tired of her or whatever, the bottom line is she basically escaped her abject poverty and a whipping and her, like, her physical abuse by going with this white couple. And then there's Spunk, who is this black bully who basically takes a man's wife right from under him. The man goes up against him and tries to stab him. And then this guy, Big Giant of a Man Spunk, basically shoots him dead. He gets off as self-defense. But then not too long later, after the wife moves in with him, he basically falls in an accident into a saw in the mill. And he basically, before he dies, he says that the other man, the husband, actually pushed him. The ghost pushed him. Again, very great toll, short, less than 10 pages, but how she tells the story, it crescendos, and then she wraps it up. And the moral of the story is, don't mess with people and don't underestimate people, because they may come back at you in the afterlife and still get their revenge on you. So you got to be careful about how you treat people in life, because it could come back to bite you in the ass and death. So all of these stories are contained within this book by Zora Neale Hurston. I'm going to probably follow up on my the reading, because there's several more where these came from, as I finish up the book, and I'll basically make comments on them in the weeks forward. I have finally found a job that they train me well to do it, and then they let me do the job, and I actually think I do a pretty decent job. I don't want anything to possibly happen that will affect my ability to get paid. So when I find out that I do something by my, something that could possibly hinder me from getting that, that is just so stupid. You know, I am going to just put out there as a cautionary tale, know what your company's policies are as far as pay, incentive pay, and bonuses. And make sure you are in compliance with those things, because it is not a good thing if you miss out on your monetary blessings because of something, you get caught up in something that you didn't know about, because that wouldn't be fair. But also, go after your passion and get paid for what you do and what you do well. Don't make sure you don't leave any money on the table, but also always pursue other streams of income. I think a lot of the politicians and other people are lining their pockets illegally with ill-gotten gains, but there are also means to do the research and make sound investments that could actually potentially help you even today. I have been an investor in a company called Acorns for a number of years. Actually, I started with Acorns back in the end of 2019 to 2020, where you can actually send your money that you would use on coffee, and they would round up. And you can make partial investments, but for just a very, very few dollars a month, I have actually been able to invest in this company. I haven't checked what my balance is for a while, but I'm going to actually have to do that relatively soon, because the money that you can invest, is it could be a grip and you would just not know it. Back in the heyday of on day trading, I had an E-Trade account, which I've since closed, but I also started seriously investing with TD Ameritrade. And it's been a number of years, and not until recently, because of my current job, that I was able to actually transfer some of the money and be able to invest. I am a stockholder in AMC as well as Nokia and a couple of other companies, and I've seen that value of my purchases increased by like 100%, completely unheard of. But it's actually kind of fun, but it's also very educational when you take the time to do the research. And I don't basically would not have any taxes until I would actually would be able to trade. But I've been able to make some pretty prudent purchases, and that's actually another means of potential income, and it's a great way to save with a return of anywhere between 20-30 to, as I said, 100%. The idea of actually having to go work in a hospital, doing a shift, staying up all night, I can't do that. But what I can do is put some of my crazy sayings on a T-shirt and sell it to people, and write and get paid to write, get sponsorships as another means to support how I want to live and to be able to put more money into saving just in case my day gig doesn't work out for whatever reason. Being able to try to be creative and then make money doing it is very fascinating to me. I think everyone should only do what they like without a whole bunch of drama, but and get paid for what you like to do and be able to save and have a lifestyle that you never thought that you could ever dream of. It's not like I'm so jet set. It's not like I have a whole bunch of money in savings. It's not like I have a whole bunch of things, but I do have the basics. I have a fully functioning truck. I have a great house, a pool that I would get into more if I didn't have to go outside to get in it, and bugs, and I hate bugs. I have a stinky breath little puppy who is getting more. She's just cute, and she's just really fun to kick it with. And she's just as gangster as her owner. The little bit of money that I have to make to be able to maintain just those basic needs is what I'm about. And it just makes it even more fruitful when I get paid to do these things. I'm happy, and I want to share the happiness with other people. So when I get to buy the latest iPhone with the latest and greatest camera, that whole update that I talked about at the top of the show, these are the things, little things that I would absolutely like to support. And as I'm allowed to live in this beautiful house on the corner of Forest Avenue, as I bring it back to its 1920s craftsman glory, while I figure out and take of all things piano lessons and ukulele lessons and just sing, and my dog howls and goes running away and barks at me to make me stop. Those are the little life experiences that I find fun. And the things that I can do legally that takes research, and I have multiple streams that can be able to support this minimally cool lifestyle, is what I'm going to be about in the next half century of my life. I've made it to a half century. Now I'm interested in how am I going to deal with the next part of this century and keep it moving, y'all, and just keep it all moving. And you can roll with me or you can roll without me, but we gonna roll. How about that? Come up with this, because this Delta variant ain't no joke, and I absolutely neglected to mention that I was going to be talking about COVID and other medical shenanigans and using I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor, the 20th Century Map on the album 20th Century Masters. I mean, you can't get through the last several months, year and a half, without thinking, how did I survive? But knowing in the back of your mind, this is how we're going to survive. You got to be strong, follow the science, wear your mask, wash your hands, and stay your ass at home if you can't do it. And then be real vigilant about punching people in the throat when they don't follow the rules. Keep back up from around me, because I don't need to hear the nonsense about how trying to keep your stupid butt safe is violating your civil liberties. I just cannot with y'all anymore. The kids are getting sick. Old people are getting sick. Everybody gets sick. But I'm going to survive this by being smart and doing what I basically stated that I was going to do. We all survive if we just follow the rules. Just saying. For stupid people. What's going on in the debacle as far as our response or lack of response to the COVID epidemic? I can truly say, from a scientific and a leadership standpoint, the management of this disease has been an epic fail. I mean, how did we get through Ebola and the first and second SARS epidemics? Because we didn't have a moron and a vast majority of an administration that were moronic. Is it mean to call him a moron? Probably. But when I basically can say he did some moronic things. So there you go. Locally, two inmates have died within a very short period of time, and young inmates have died in Silverdale with. And I'm wondering just how many others are sick. They said in the past 4 weeks, probably more like 8 weeks, they've seen a surge in positivity, and which makes me think that they have not taken the appropriate mitigation methods and steps to keep this in check. And I'm very, very much fearful for the other inmates as well as the other COs that are tending it. I think it's going to be something out of the stand. Because there's going to be so many people getting sick from the super flu. And we have not seen an end to the deaths in these young people. Prayers up to them. I hope they will mandate vaccination or people will voluntarily get vaccinated. There were three people that died in also a North Georgia county that they've shut down and gone to virtual education because two bus drivers and one monitor died from COVID. they just don't have now. They had to go to virtual because they don't have enough people to basically ferry the kids to school. So people of North Georgia are getting more stupid if you're in public school. And kids are getting sick and they're being affected and they're being hospitalized at record numbers. Even little kids, well, 13-year-old Allie Henderson from Terry, Mississippi, when she got sick, in spite of no masks, no social distancing, no change in the ventilation, and mandating that you can't go virtual in places like Texas, and they're trying to ban mask mandates. And they just continue to pass stupid laws. The hospital systems in northern Idaho are stretched thin that they're getting ready to start rationing health care, meaning they're going to have to determine by almost like a raffle who gets access to oxygen or a ventilator or Regeneron, the monoclonal antibody. There ain't no nurses. There ain't no beds, there ain't no doctors, there ain't no medicines to take care of all these people. And they did not do any mitigation tactics to stop the spread. And now it seems like FDA and everybody else, CDC, saying it's here to stay because people won't do what is necessary and didn't do what was necessary in the beginning of this plague to stamp the plague down. That, to me, is disheartening. And we still got people passing stupid laws and asking stupid questions about the validity of vaccine mandates in private companies and validity of mass mandates and people marching and trying to arrest principals of elementary schools and a citizen's arrest because of a mass mandate. I can't. I'm tired.
I think so.
But COVID is big business. I'm writing a sci-fi book, and I vaguely touched on this, but I'm going to have to go back to it and start rewriting. But
between 96 and 2003,
you can't tell me between Regeneron and some of the other makers of PPE, but in particular the Remdesivir and Regeneron, the monoclonal antibody cocktail, the companies that make, and Pfizer, all of the Moderna, all of the companies that are making these fights, they are evidently some of the biggest contributors to these political action committees, have connections with a lot of these Republican governors. I find this is me talking about conspiracy theory. There is a direct connection between one of Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, one of his biggest contributors to his political action committee that's associated with Regeneron antimicrobial antibody. So as long as this expensive treatment is around, and as long as the COVID epidemic continues to proliferate and continues on, it's going to line the pockets of all of these politicians and all of these businessmen, because COVID is big business. That's why on a sneak tip, although he's trying to ban and not pay these teachers, he's basically, his political action committee is supplementing his salary as a public servant when he's doing nothing for the public interest. Why he's allowing COVID to rampage through his state, he's getting richer and richer and richer. He's on a sneak tip, calling up the National Guard, basically becoming pallbearers and morticians, and secretly buying up these portable semi-morgue refrigerated trucks for all the bodies. He has to keep COVID going because he needs to get richer. And if we truly find true evidence of a direct effect with all of these governors that are passing these rules in order to line their pockets, I'm all for a Justice Department investigation into contribution to these political action committees. You can't tell me one single donor basically is completely and from a monetary standpoint is supporting these political action committees and there not being a conflict of interest. You can't tell me that. And you can't tell me that some of these policies that they're passing to prolong an epidemic is not illegal. I'm watching a show right now where they basically took several people of the genocide in Rwanda to court, the Hague, for crimes against humanity. When we really sit back and we look at who ripped off the government and who basically did serious action to prolong this epidemic at the cost of lives and the call and just to line their pockets, I'm all for putting them all in jail. I'm all for war crimes. I'm all for these tribunals to persecute them, because if we follow the money and the money lead us down that trail, but how stupid they would absolutely be. But these are the people that are supposed, they're public servants, but they don't mind bilking, using all of us as punks or pawns, bilking, getting a salary, and doing whatever they can to prolong a plague, because they know they probably won't get caught. I'm interested in following the money. I'm interested in seeing a direct correlation between some of these stupid policies and some of the underhanded crap that they absolutely did to prolong this plague, and they did nothing to stop it. That to me is disheartening, but I'm all for the stop of over-policing, but I'm also for the stop of people using and abusing their power, because it's completely abuse of power and a complete sociopathic disregard for the welfare of the people that you're supposed to be protecting. And you need to be up underneath the jail if that's absolutely true. If you prolong this plague and you did policies to prolong this plague, God help you if people find it and get the evidence against you. God help you.
That is Jennifer Hudson's rendition of Aretha Franklin's Chain of Fools for the album, for the soundtrack for the movie Respect, which I'm going to probably watch again. I'm going to have to probably either rent it. More than that, I'm probably going to buy it just because it was such a good movie. And that's one of the songs that I'm really listening to. Everybody seems to have dropped the album, but I keep going back to Aretha and Prince, because I actually got his deluxe posthumous release of his album, Welcome to America, recently. So enjoy Jennifer Hudson as she croons Chain of Fools for the soundtrack, Respect. And I really get why the queen herself chose Jennifer Hudson to not only be the actress, but to basically allow her to redo these songs. She has an amazing, amazing voice.
This is actually, unfortunately, it's going to be a really short part segment. I've tried... Or actually, let me stop lying. I have not tried to listen to the new, what's his name? Kanye finally dropped his album. Not sure if I'm going to be able to get into that. But Nas also dropped his album a couple of weeks ago. I heard It's the Truth, but I haven't been able, I haven't listened to it. Lil Nas X, the troll extraordinaire, is taking pictures of his little gay skinny self pregnant because he's getting ready to drop an album. I'm just going to have to listen to that just because people hate him so much because he's so free and he doesn't really give a crap about what anybody says about him. I wish I could have that kind of swagger. I'm still listening to the soundtrack from Respect. I really like the movie. I'm going to rent it and watch it again. Probably buy it for streaming. And I'm definitely listening to that. I just downloaded the album itself. Was listening to I Say a Little Prayer, which I'm going to end this section on. But also Spanish Harlem is really good. Amazing Grace. This actually just brings back great memories and makes me want to make new memories as many of these songs being a soundtrack of my life going forward. Why not? Aretha Franklin was one of the greatest R&B singers of our time. And this biopic was a great tribute to her. And I encourage you to stream it, listen to it, like it, and go from there.
Summertime and the living is easy. Fish are jumping and the cotton is high. Oh, your daddy ain't rich, and your ma is good looking.
This is the late, great Mahalia Jackson crooning from the album Summertime. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. And what an amazing way to introduce this next section of the podcast, What I'm Watching. This next session is my feelings as I've watched Black Earth Rising, which chronicles, it's a Hollywood or BBC rendition or chronicling of the Rwandan genocide. And I also am watching Raintree County, which is Elizabeth Taylor and Montgomery Clift's Golden Globe nominated film about a Southern belle who goes batshit crazy because she finds out she's mixed with blackness. Both have to do with racism, white supremacy, and just the effects, deleterious effects of colonialism. And why not this poignant song? And Black Earth Rising is about a woman, Kate Ashby, who is made motherless because she's a survivor of the genocide that took at least over a million people on the Hutu and the Tutsi side. Again, another deleterious remnant of colonialism in the modern 20th century and now 21st century. And we're still feeling the hiccups of that, not only in Rwanda, but throughout the sub-Saharan continent of Africa, but also in Haiti and everything that affects us today in the United States. And thank you. And this song, as well as every other song, is available for immediate streaming on iTunes in my one podcast playlist or wherever you listen to music.
Does the long way
So my sister hit me to a Netflix limited series, Black Earth Rising. And I'm going to talk about that in full, and I'm actually going to do an expanded post about it on my blog that I hope you guys will take the time to read, because in part it's going to be based on a lot of what I'm saying in this part of the podcast. But it is Wednesday night here in north side of Chattanooga, and I was flipping around. I was watching Dr. Pimple Popper, and I kind of hit the wrong button, so I couldn't see the lipoma being removed from dude's neck. And I flipped back to movies for me to watch on Hulu. This movie popped up, Raintree County, starring Elizabeth Taylor and Montgomery Clift, 1957 Golden Globe winner or nominee. And the main character, Elizabeth Taylor, goes batshit crazy because she found out she's part Black. She's beautiful, and it just kills me that this movie is so controversial when you got people like the Kardashians that are changing their body cosmetically to be spicy Black white people. They are, I don't know if they're Armenian family, father, originally from Armenian, or are they just Italian? Not sure. But they're not just quote unquote run of the mill Caucasian, but they're doing a whole bunch of cultural appropriation from the lips to the hips, just saying. And I'm really intrigued by this, the premise of the movie, because you could tell that the way they're shooting Montgomery Clift, that this is after his accident in the Aris, where he actually got severely injured in a automobile accident. And he's had significant plastic surgery, and he had some scarring, but because they shoot him at certain angles and his face doesn't move right. He doesn't have the plastic surgeons that did all the Kardashians work and Botch didn't exist. But I'm going to continue to watch this movie shot in pre-Civil War. In part, it looks like it was shot somewhere here in Tennessee as well as in Kentucky. And this bayou looks really remotely like Mississippi or even Louisiana, but it's beautiful. But it's with the time and a whole bunch of white people that they wish that they were back in this time. But this is actually absolutely pretty cool. But this is not what I wanted to basically base this part of the podcast about what I'm watching, because my sister hit me to this movie, and she usually gets me turned on to these movies and series, and I have to binge watch them, and I get hooked, and then she makes me mad because I just watch all the stuff. But this is actually a very good one, and I've watched this twice. I'm probably going to watch it for a third time because I'm very fascinated by the cast and the production staff for Black Earth Rising. It is basically a series chronicling the aftermath of the Rwandan genocide, but it basically is a homage to the destruction of imperialism and colonialism. I did not know that this area was first occupied by the Belgians and then France, and tried to be controlled by the British. We always consider the British to be the imperialists and the conquerors and the colonizers, but they weren't. The French has some passive aggressive BS going on, and they have been fragrantly pulling the strings, not just of Mother Africa, but also in their retribution to when they got kicked out of Haiti, and they're still convulsing from that. But that's neither here nor there. That's for a whole different show. And also the subject of why Haiti, an idea that I just came up with as far as a possible screenplay. But anyways, from approximately a little less than 100 days from the 7th of April of to July of 1994, over 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus were slaughtered. Such a short period of time, they made the Nazis look like amateurs. But I was struck and a little annoyed that the screenwriter and director was a white dude by the name of Hugo Blick. The executive producer, Greg Brent, I think it is, Chris Rope, and the other producer, Abby Bach, all white people. And I'm like, why do we need the colonizers to basically tell our story? But it was the black actors and actresses led by Michaela Cole, who plays Kate Ashby, that embodied their characters and brought the characters to life to be able to tell the story of the struggle of the native Tutsis and their genocidal brethren, because they really were brethren. If you look at the genetics of these two tribes, there's very few variations, very closely related. There's a whole cast of amazing people that you've probably recognized from roles as far as most recently in Black Panther, but other equally interesting roles. There is Noma Demozinea, who plays Alice Montezero. There is Donnie Supinti, who played General Simon Nyamora. There is Abina Anor, that plays by Mundinizi. There's Tyrone Higgins, that plays Patrice Galamani. Then there's a whole bunch of other do-gooders, led by Harriet Walker, and even John Goodman makes an appearance. The other American actress, what is her name? I will find her name in a minute. Because she's played like a pathologist, and she played actually... She represented the state, U.S. State Department in this particular movie. But I say all of these things that I was, the one thing that really struck me besides the long-term effects of colonialism and the first part of the movie is when you meet Eve Ashby, and she's basically told to sit down somewhere by someone that's actually from Africa. Who is basically pissed off about why do we have to take the prosecution of war crimes and leave the solutions for Africa to all these white people at The Hague, etc. And I completely get it, because the years of colonialism leaves behind generational guilt, because there's no one answer to the effects of colonialism. How do you pay back a people that you have broken them down, you enslaved them, stolen their goods, stolen their national treasures, stolen their natural resources to build your own colony? Rwanda and countries like Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or the DRC as it's referred to in the movie, they were, and the civil wars that followed, they were ripe for this genocide. Colonialism taught a people that lived in peace for a millennium to be to war against each other, because the Tutsis and the Hutus since 500 BCs were chilling. They didn't ask the evildoers or the colonists to come over. They didn't ask Belgium. They didn't ask the Dutch. They didn't ask France or England to come over and fuck with them. They were sitting chilling from the first Aboriginal Pygmy tribes to the original Hutus and the Tutsis. Tutsis, they were chilling like a villain, farming their land, building their kingdom. And along came the Belgians, knew of the conflict, pitted them against each other, and instigated the tensions that would keep this particular part of Africa that was resource rich, unstable for another millennia, just because they wanted to line their pockets. That is the overwhelming and repetitive story of East, West, and Southern Africa. And it's been propagated since the inception of previous countries, and being able to keep us off kilter and pitted against each other while the colonizers basically rape Mother Africa over and over again. This genocide was a means to that end. The world knew what was going to happen. They saw it happen, didn't stop it, because they figured, okay, if they exterminate each other, then we'll come in like the cavalry and still take what we want. But they were like, nah. And that's where the genocide was stopped by the Tutsis. And then it was, they basically chased a segment of the Hutu tribe into Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of Congo, and then basically exterminated them. And then the world tried to bring to trial the people that stopped the genocide, because they perpetrated genocide on the people that perpetuated genocide on them. However, that's what all the Day of Reflection, which is celebrated on April 7th, about. You can't basically only tell one side of the story. You have to tell both sides of the story, reflect on it, pray for the souls of those that were killed and the souls of the people that perpetrated, the child warriors, the people that died in their beds, all of the people that cut deals, that undercut their people in the name of progress. You won't ever move forward if you don't remember the past, because you are always going to be damned to repeat the past, the insanity, if you don't recognize it and learn from it, so you won't ever repeat those mistakes. You can't bury it, because it's going to come up in other ways. That's what Kate Ashby found out. She always thought she was Tutsi. Her family, the evildoers or the good do-gooders, thought keeping her true identity as a Hutu refugee, hiding that from her. But as an adult, she would find out that not only was she a part of the tribe that instigated the genocide, they also, the people that knew this, were willing to kill her to keep that secret, to keep that a secret. And people were able, and they had it in their mind that they were doing their country a service by signing agreements with the devil, protecting people that perpetrated the genocide, covering up these atrocities. And governments were complicit, United States, France, England, they were all complicit in this plausible deniability, which was just blew my mind. But it wasn't just those three. It was everybody. They were all in on the game. We'll ignore it. We'll let it take care of itself. And then we're going to let them implode again. And we, but the thing is, and I was, when I was unpacking, I found an article or something from a magazine that I had put on my corkboard like years ago. And it was basically talking about the rapes, et cetera, and the Rwandan genocide. One, it wasn't all that long ago, but as early as 1997, and I think I basically cut that out of maybe the Dallas Morning News because I was still in residency when a lot of this, these things were going on. The early genocide took place in 94, but the dismantling of the refugee camps in Zaire, now the formerly Zaire, now Democratic Republic of Congo, actually took place in 96, 97. We're talking about 50,000 Hutus were basically exterminated by the invading army from Rwanda, the winners, the Tutsis. They basically, their retribution and payback was to kill off a whole bunch of sick women and children. We're talking about 3 years of just awful strife. People are trying to downplay these numbers because they say, like, oh, these people could not have killed people, this many people in such a short period of time. Oh, yes, they can. Because they were taught, they were not only taught by the best, because we knew what the Nazis did with the gas chambers. We're talking about black people who are always determined and always have to be the best at what they're doing. So if you're going to commit genocide, leave it to a black, a grace of black people to be able to do it, because they basically did it in spades, unfortunately. But what is very disarming or alarming is how the world basically just sat by and let all of this happen. They were banking on them killing each other and then going in and taking their natural resources. They were banking on this nation that was agricultural and never being able to dig itself out of these atrocities. They were banking on us not to succeed. And they sat by in judgment and let all this happen and were willing to let it happen again. But God, or but Allah, or but the spirit that will never die. The whole Rwanda genocide did not need to happen. And the world is very shameful how the superpowers of the world let it happen and did nothing to stop it. And then tried to shift blame, but they were all complicit in this genocide. No, the machete warriors and the people that harbor hate, they got their just dessert because, what is his name, Galeama, he, at the end of the movie, he basically was going to, after they promised he was never going to be extradited back to Rwanda to stay in trial, he basically walked in front of, I don't know if a fire truck or an ambulance. He was sitting in relative luxury after committing all of those atrocities. And he was protected by the same people that let him basically murder 800,000 of ethnic Tutsis. Then there was a whole bunch of other things. The blinding of the guard in the Democratic Republic of Congo. How Alice Minizero came back with her sister and became a special advisor to her sister and making her change the constitution so other people could run for president. And it also is remarkable that a woman had to run that fractured company because they couldn't trust men to be able to run it, because you would get people like Patrice Gaimani that would basically take it back to its genocidal roots, spreading the hate, fanning an uprising. Does it sound like our previous administration? Power at all costs, but really not giving a crap about anybody that's in the country. Because he did that when he was leading the Hutus on their rampage in the genocide from in 94. And then he was using the sick women and children as shields in the refugee camps while he was spinning and trying to gather them up to basically retake Rwanda. It had nothing to do with his tribe. It had to all to do with the power trip, and he was going to use any means necessary to shield himself and to grab power. That is true and conquering and craziness that is a remnant and a symptom of the effects of colonialism. Because I don't think if he had truly been under and subjugated to the tribal laws that did rule the Hutus and the Tutsis, he would have never been able to do that. They would have sat his ass down. And they would have never allowed the butchering of his own people. That would have never happened. That type of cowardice, I don't believe, would have been tolerated within his tribe. But when you are blighted and when you are infected with the malignancy of colonialism, that's what happens, unfortunately. If I have time, in subsequent episodes, I'm going to explore the effects of colonialism because it was rife in this particular movie, which I do give 5 stars. But it's also rife in my own country, as well as how it shaped the history of Haiti. We went from independence to subjugation just because they owed a grip to the French government, the former colonizers of that particular republic. And I find it all very fascinating. People do and say things based on the malignant effects of colonialism. And I think that needs to be further explored in future episodes and also in my writing. I'm going to actually, as I said, I'm going to expand upon this section as I review Black Earth Rising, the effects of colonialism as it affects the history and the future of the different republics throughout West and East Africa, but also why do we need the colonizers to tell our stories, and how can we become independent and successful? And I say this like I am African. I'm African American, but I also did my 23andMe, and I have strong ties to West Africa. But I say all of this to say all of that to say that, how can we as a people, meaning Africans and African Americans, become successful and independent without the umbrella and the subjugation of colonialism? How can we truly be free? How can we be successful? And can we do it independently and legally without always the opinions and the support of the colonizers? Do we need to live in harmony with everyone? Yes, but we need to also be able to stand on our own and be successful without the advice and being able to do what we can do in a positive way to be successful. Why can't we do that without the colonizers? I don't know. And what does it mean to live harmoniously do we need always to be able to live harmoniously, to be able to be under the subject and supervision of the colonizers? I don't know, but it's something I'm willing to explore.
And that's how I'm going to end this podcast, with a little bit of Earth, Wind, and Fire from their album, The Best of Earth, Wind, and Fire, Shining Star. Again, this is available for immediate streaming on iTunes within my podcast playlist or wherever you listen to music. I don't know too many people that get to do what they like and what they love to do, but being this is a passion project, I'm always just grateful that I'm allowed to basically share what I'm interested in with the general world. And I don't want to lead on a really sad note, because I don't think he would like this. There was an actor that just passed away that played Omar Little on The Wire. This is Michael Taylor Thomas, I think. He just was an amazing. He was the most feared gangster, Robin Hood, in the worst part of Baltimore. And it just so happened, as an aside, he was openly gay. But that was an aside, because he would cap you and take your shit from you. He passed away from what appears to be an apparent drug overdose. He was struggling for a while, the pandemic, and then Lovecraft Country, with depression and anxiety, and of course with the drug addiction. And my heart goes out to him and his family. He was taken way too soon. Rest in peace, rest in power, King. But he was a shining star among us, just like Chadwick, just like everybody else that was taken too soon in the shit show that has been 2020. Now it's 2021, and what are we going to do to make this any different? I'm just excited about the next part of my life, the next half century, and finding out all of the cool things that are going to happen to me, and just watching it happen and making it happen. And don't forget to navigate to my online bookstore, Chatterbooks, for a percentage of the proceeds from all your purchases go in my pockets to another stream of income, as well as navigate to my Dale's Angels Inc. blog and pick up some blog, again, to support another stream of income for me. Use my Tenfro Got Jokes, or just Tenfro, as a to get a discount code off of your shipping from Ship a Bag of Dicks. Yes, that is probably one of my most paid promotions that I have done in this life, that is my podcast. I don't know if I'm considered an influencer, but being an influencer for Ship a Bag of Dicks is the best thing. And basically tell people when you're sending it as a joke, the glitter bomb or a chocolate gummy penis, because it will make the recipient cry if they don't know that you sent it as a joke. Just saying, know that from experience. And I've thoroughly enjoyed creating this podcast. And again, as always, thank you for listening. And don't forget to leave comments. They're not too trolly. And if you drop into my DMs, I may actually read the comments on the podcast itself. You can send it to tenfroisreading@gmail.com. Drop it in my DMs on tenfroisreading on Instagram, Twitter, or even on Facebook. And again, I hope you guys have a great week, and you join me next time as I continue to drop the knowledge and fuss about everything in general. And you guys have a great day. Bye. And I leave you with Proud Mary from Tina Turner.
Saw the good side of the sea.
just a ride on the road.